Imagine surrounding yourself with incredible women, women who've overcome challenges, they've rebounded after failures and disappointments, and women who are not afraid to shine their brilliance to make a mark in the world. These women support other like-minded women because they know there is plenty of opportunity for everyone, and that together we really can make a difference, grow our businesses while have fun along the way. This is what Women in Leadership Podcast is all about. Welcome. I'm your host, Anne-Marie Cross. Grab a cover of your favorite beverage, pull up a chair, and let's get this conversation started. And welcome to another episode. So my guest today says, create a culture of trust where the truth will not be sacrificed for politeness. I love that. Joining me on today's show is Kelly Hopping. She is the Chief Marketing Officer at Demandbase and is an experienced business executive and marketing leader. Kelly is passionate about building world-class teams, generating and accelerating pipeline, differentiating and growing high-quality brands, empowering up-and-coming future leaders to thrive and lead businesses through change and acceleration. She prides herself on strategic thinking, results-driven execution, and operational efficiency. She published her first book last year, which is titled Rising, How to Thrive as a Corporate Executive While Staying True to Yourself, and is currently working on a second book. Now, on today's show, Kelly is going to share how being effective in your job doesn't mean you have to be better than your peers. She's going to talk about leadership takes time and to not be afraid of making lateral moves as they help develop more well-rounded leaders, as well as how to recognize your value. And guess what? Not apologize for it, especially women. And so much more. Welcome to the show, Kelly.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That was such a generous intro. Thank you for that. It's great to be here.
I love the quote, Kelly, that you mentioned. I want to start off with that. Create a culture of trust where the truth will not be sacrificed for politeness. Why is this something that is a quote that you mentioned? I mean, I love it, but I want to get your thoughts on this. Why is this so important?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it may get me in trouble occasionally, but I like direct, right? I like to be authentic. That doesn't mean mean. It doesn't mean rude. It doesn't mean passive aggressive. It means direct and transparent. You can't come at that unless you have an established relationship, right? To walk in, you have to, your partner in the conversation has to know that you're coming from a place of good intent. So if you lead with empathy and come with that place, then that directness is actually incredibly freeing on both sides, because you're setting up a culture that says, I'm comfortable to share feedback, knowing that it's in a safe space, and I want you to do the same. So in my particular role as a CMO, that relationship is typically with a chief sales officer. So that sales and marketing alignment is so very critical. And those are two functions that, by just human nature, will pull apart in different directions. They are motivated different. The people are wired differently. The science behind how you do them is completely different. And so there's always a little bit of like, well, I sent the leads over, you could have closed them. And then there's the sales side of like, if you give me better quality leads, I could actually close these. Instead, you're giving me crap. And so there's this innate tension that if you don't come to the table with like a shared understanding of, hey, we're all winning together. And if you tell me that everything is roses and then go back to your team and complain about marketing, we're not going to fix anything. So don't be polite. Don't tell me it's great. Don't smile. And I've had both. So I was at a startup and I had a sales counterpart that was, all things were great. He loved me. He had great things to say. Marketing quality was awesome. He was super happy about the programs we were running. And then my boss would come to me, who was also his boss, and would say, sales is ticked off. They're not getting anything they need. I'm like, that's not what they're telling me. He's like, they complain to me all the time. And I'm like, why? And it was because they were trying to be polite and just say, oh, it's great, Kelly. Whatever you got, this is fine. And I realized like that was so frustrating. I finally just sit him down and be like, hey, shoot me straight. I can't fix anything if I don't know it's broken. So tell me wrong so we can fix it. So I walked into this org, like we started meeting months before I ever started, to start building our relationship over coffee, over family, over sports, over all the things. I just spent the last 2 days with them at our board meeting, and we just spent a lot of time just like sharing our thoughts and feedback. And it's just amazing. Like I said, we're kind. That doesn't mean we're being polite.
Yes. I love that differentiation, and I love the way that you've explained so beautifully. And I'm going to just highlight that in case people missed it. It really is the intention in the approach and the attitude that you go towards that conversation. And I think I love the directness when it's done with the intention and the attitude and the approach of, we want the best for both parties. Let's see if we can openly discuss this and come up with a solution that is going to benefit both people. And often when conversations go in the other direction is because you haven't laid the groundwork and you haven't established that environment that, hey, some of the topics and things that we talk about may get a little bit, you know, opposite or polite, but we still want the best for both. And I think going forward with any conversation, whether it be in the workplace, whether it be at home, is that kind of intention is so important in the conversation.
Love that. Absolutely. Love it.
Talk a little bit about being effective in your job doesn't mean that you have to be better than your peers. I love this as well. Share a little bit behind this insight.
Yeah, I mean, there's, I have been in environment. Well, first of all, if one function wins in a company and the company doesn't win, it doesn't matter, right? Like if I'm going to like tout my accolades of how great we've done in marketing, but sales isn't actually closing deals or growing revenue, then it doesn't matter how well we did in marketing, because that's ultimately where we're going. We either win together as a team or we lose together as a team. I tell my team all the time that your mindset, and it's hard to do this, but in terms of the way you think about impact and priorities, company first, then team, then yourself, which means we need to think about what's best for the company first, and then what's going to help the team then be successful, and then it's you, versus I think we often flip ourselves to the top of that equation, and as a result, that's when companies kind of pull apart, cultures fall apart. So I think that's really important. There's a great book that I read after I came off of a less stellar kind of sales and marketing relationship early in my career. And it was leading without authority. And the whole book is really about co-elevation. So it's this idea that by co-elevating the people around us, we create that mindset of winning together and losing together. But we also recognize that like, there's nothing any of us are doing as a solo project, right? Everything requires support from IT or from our copywriters or from our sales guys or from our ops team or whoever it is, finance for budgeting it. I mean, all the things. And so bringing that team along for the ride, people are so much more willing to help when they feel like they're a part of the solution and not the one doing the work on the back end without any of the credit. So how do we bring those teams and co-elevate? And I think that's really important for me specifically between sales and marketing. I mean, like I said, we win together, we lose together. But I had a situation where we were hitting all of our marketing targets. And so we hit like from a leads and opportunities pipeline perspective, we were hitting everything. And so, but sales was not following and I couldn't figure it out why. And so I was like, I got so tempted. It's human nature and it's a flaw in humanity that the first thing is like, man, I'm doing my job. It sure would be great if you could do yours. Like you kind of get this like resentfulness, which is not healthy, but it was frustrating. And so I did a lot of kind of like, okay, let's see what's going on. And so what I did finally was I went and I pulled all the opportunities because what was happening is we were hitting our pipeline goals and then they would just sit in what we call stage two opportunity and they weren't progressing to close one. And it was just marketing leads specifically. It wasn't any of the other kind. And so I went down and I sat with like the top six sellers in the company. And I said, I was like, and you again, approach with good intent. You don't kind of come in and say, how come you're not working these leads? You say, hey, I noticed you have a lot of marketing sourced opportunities in your pipe, but they're not progressing. And I would love to understand why, so that we can help bring you better quality leads in the future. So again, I'm going to kind of put myself on the line. I'm going to be vulnerable in this, and I'm coming so that we can find a solution, not to point fingers. And so we sat down. So I interviewed all these guys, and we'd go line by line through the pipe and say, well, what's wrong with this one? What's wrong with this one? What's wrong with this one? And what I realized is there was a challenge, and they were all great opportunities. Sales had accepted them. They'd said, yeah, these are good, but then didn't move them. And it was because they weren't ready. These pipeline, they weren't ready. And what I realized was like, oh, my qualification process of pipeline was qualifying for budget authority and need, but not for timing. Meaning we were missing a question in our qualification process to say, are you planning to make a purchase in the next 3 to 6 months? And they weren't, and we weren't asking that. And so sales was getting them and realizing these people aren't going to buy for 3 years. And so they were just sitting, and I was like, oh, that's an actionable thing. I can go fix that. I can go actually change that. And then all of a sudden now the conversion rates through the pipeline, the opportunity quality, sales satisfaction with marketing, everything skyrocketed because they were like, oh, finally, these are the opportunities. Much better. These people are ready to buy. I can close these. And it's getting into the weeds with good intent and saying, like, walk me through the challenge so that I can go back and fix it. And if you're being polite and not talking, that doesn't work.
Yeah. I just love that example, Kelly. And, you know, when you think about from a leadership perspective, and I'm not going to name names, but if we think of some of the leaders of various establishments, not necessarily organizations, when they bring ego to the table, and you could very well have done that and said, we are doing all of the requirements, we are passing you good leads, what's going on? And you could have, as you said, in your right, have said that, because as far as you were concerned, it is. But going with an opportunity of, let's see, let's work this together, curiosity, not condemnation, you were allowed to, or you were able to see some steps of learning for the process, and you've strengthened it, and everybody wins. Wouldn't it be wonderful if our leaders of different countries and so forth came with that approach as well, from a not just me, ego, I'm leading, and the rest of you have to follow suit. I love that. And so what approach, because I'd love this stuff to ask you this too. Because you have really set the intention that this is how you're going to show up, that just influences everyone around you to take on that approach, because they see it, they experience it, they see the impact that it's making. How has that trickled to the other team and even external teams that work with you?
Yeah, it's a great question. And by the way, that curiosity without condemnation, I want to use that quote. I love that. I'm going to write that down. I love that you said that. I think it starts at the top, right? I think there's in that leadership behavior has to be learned. Because like I said, it's counter to human nature, I think, to kind of come from a place of let's fix versus let's blame. And so, you know, I think it's really important that we at the top are very much aligned. It's something I talk to my team about all the time, about, hey, we are like, our job as marketers is to make sales love us. That means we're giving a brand that they're proud of. We're giving them quality pipeline that they like. We're giving messaging that they're comfortable teaching. We're enabling them to tell our story, whatever it is. But we are, our job is to make sales ultimately love us. And that means all the way through, we all own the relationship with sales. And I will, and it comes down to sometimes real time feedback. I was in a meeting the other day, and I noticed one of my leaders was starting to finger point a little bit at something sales was doing, and starting to be like, well, I think it's your data that so-and-so, and started to point. And as soon as that meeting was over, so I switched the conversation in that meeting, didn't put her on the spot, but had that. But as soon as that conversation was over, I went to her. I said, hey, that was dangerously close to finger pointing. Like, we are all one team here. Like, if we want to ask questions to kind of understand more, let's do that. But when you start pointing in that meeting, I can feel the tension in the room. I can feel the divide. We are now sales and marketing, two different functions. That is not healthy. I was like, we are all one team. I was like, I was like, just so you know, from a culture perspective, I have zero appetite for that. And so that's not something, if you see your teams do it, if I see us, I'm going to call you out every time on it, because it's not productive. But I mean, you mentioned about ego. I mean, you know, I think that's part of the behavior, you know, and you said about kind of, you know, winning, others have to lose instead of winning together. That ego, I've worked for a couple really lovely narcissists in my career that that could not swallow that, right? It had to be, it was about looking better than others. And that behavior gets, I mean, it costs trust. It divides a culture. It causes people to get defensive. It causes people to kind of retreat and protect their information because they don't want to kind of get blasted on something. It just causes this very lopsided culture, and it's not a place where we all end together. So,
Yeah, so agree with that. And, you know, when you create a culture like that, unfortunately, you lose top quality people, and they may not realize it, but they will end up losing in the long term anyway, you know. I mean, that's a whole other topic of conversation, but people notice the difference between those environments. And I think creating a culture where it is an us versus me, you, them, us, is just more healthier. And everybody can lift each other up. I mean, that's kind of, you know, the community. If you look at, say, royalty and leaders, that was done way in the past, kings and queens, if you lorded over your citizens and so forth and made it so difficult, I mean, your job as that ruler, king, queen, whatever, is to create such an environment that everyone can thrive in the way in which they're created and their gifts and talents to the betterment, because ultimately that benefits you. So why would you, you know, create an environment that is oppressive and suppressive, because ultimately that is going to impact you as the leader and ultimately. So anyway, let's move on to the next topic, because that's a whole other episode on its own. But I love the way that you say leadership takes time and to not be afraid of making lateral moves as they help develop more well-rounded leaders. I mean, you've given some great examples already, but let's spend some time in unpacking this.
Yeah. So I have a few kind of philosophies around that. One of them is that I believe that once you get in, you know, in a standard kind of corporate America world, I think once you get somewhat to a director, senior director level, you really get typecast. At that stage, it's really hard to kind of convince somebody that you have skills in other areas. You kind of, that's the area where you grow up. You may have potential to expand, but it's hard to kind of jump side to side. And so pre-director level is really, really important to take laterals all day long, because you round out your skill set to go from, in marketing, it'd be from going to demand, from demand gen to brand, to creative, to events, to, you know, search or whatever it is. And so I think it's really important, because you round out your skill sets and then you don't kind of get typecast as one dimensional as you move up in your career. So I think that's really important. But the other thing is, or probably two other areas. One is, I think hard skills can get learned fairly quickly. How to run an event, how to buy keywords for paid ads, how to you know, build a campaign. Like, these are all skills you can learn. And I think people generally think, like, especially ambitious folks who are highly motivated, they think, well, I've mastered SEM. I've mastered event planning. I've mastered these things. That means I should start moving up. The softer skills just don't get rushed like that. Like, you have to have lived in that world. You have to have you know, learn to read a room. You have to understand organizational dynamics. You have to understand people. You have to be humbled a few times in your career. All the things that kind of make you a better leader. You have to have watched more leaders, good and bad, to know what you want to be. But if you rush that stage, I feel like you can get there and functionally probably be okay, but you're just not ready at that skill level. So I think that's the real reason why I think it's so important early to take those lateral moves, work for different types of leaders, work for different types of managers with different metrics and different success criteria, because all of those things develop both the hard and the soft skills. And that's what's going to, and so that part, I just never want to rush it. The way I like to think about it too, on a lateral move, is I sort of think of a career or a job, let's say, as sort of a three-legged stool. You have your function, you have your industry, and you have your location. And if you want to pivot, if you try to pivot two of those at one time, you know, your stool kind of topples over. But if you can hang on to two and kind of have stability, you can convince folks to pivot with you. So I think of it as, for example, so if I went to grad school and I would have, and there'd be people who came in that were investment bankers, and they would say, okay, after grad school, I want to go be a brand marketer. These brand companies are like, you know nothing about brand marketing. Like, how in the world are you going to make this pivot? And so what they would talk about a lot is saying, hey, you've got the skill in finance. You're an investment banker. So why don't you look for a job in corporate finance in a consumer goods company? Learn the business, understand how it works. And then that pivot inside consumer goods from corporate finance to marketing is a one step. So it's sort of a lateral two hop process, but it allows you to kind of like build credibility in an industry, then build credibility in a function. And you can make some moves. That's how you can, to me, that's how you change careers, is by saying, okay, I'm going to plant my foot in something. I'm going to pivot on the other, because I can't hop with both. You know, I need to move a little bit at a time. So those are how I have coached the team a lot. Hey, like, this is a two hop move. It's probably not one. And you know, you've got time. We have long careers. Like, it's okay to stretch that out, and you're going to learn so much. You're going to pick up all those soft skills in the process.
Yeah. And you know what? Those soft skills, Kelly, I think are so important. I remember working with a client when I was in the career industry, and I had seen her go from office manager right up to project manager for multi-million dollar organizations, and I could, in a very male-dominated space. And I could see that she had the aptitude, and she continued to develop that. But also what really was speaking volumes throughout all of these successes and achievements is exactly what you spoke about. And we call them attitude and approach. Her character and the way in which she approached her team was using what we would call those soft skills, but that was just who she was. And she learned and appreciated what her team was going through, because she'd been there and done that. And the only way that you can often really appreciate and have an understanding towards your team and the larger team is because you've been there, you've worked with them, you may have done that job yourself. And I think there's a richness that comes from that through having walked that journey that you may not have been able to even understand or grasp had you gone so quickly, you know, and done a one stop, when a two stop could have really provided you with some great, solid trainings and experience. So I totally can see that that's so important. Let's talk about another area where I know men struggle with this too. Mm-hmm. But what I notice is that they kind of just ignore it or just move through anyway. That was around recognizing the value and just putting themselves up for positions, or just, knowing that they are valuable. So talk about how can we recognize value, not apologize for it as women?
Yeah, it's a hard one. Certainly like in putting ourselves up for jobs, I think men are willing to say, yeah, I've done generally that stuff. I could figure the rest out, when you kind of look at criteria or qualifications for a job. Women are like, I've only done 8 out of 10 of those things, so I'm obviously not qualified for this job. And will sort of almost filter themselves out because they assume that they are not there. Whereas, you know, I coach women all the time and I'm like, hey, you've got the skills, you've got the intelligence, you've got the street smarts, and you've done enough of these things close enough. Go for it. Like, push through that. You'll learn it on the job. It'll be great. The same man who applied for it doesn't know how to do it any better than you do, but he's faking it until he makes it. And so you can do the same for that. So I think that's really important. And then on the not apologize, it's such a fine line. I sort of, you know, I had a gal I worked with once. She called it up talk. This thing that women do where we propose ideas as a question, so it doesn't sound too aggressive or offensive, right? We say things like, so I was thinking maybe about this idea to do an event in Las Vegas. What do y'all think? Men are like, hey, we're going to do this event in Las Vegas. It's going to cost this amount of money and I need budget approval. And it's a totally different communication, because women, the way we deliver often comes across as not confident, hesitating. I need y'all to back me up, to validate that it's a good idea. It kind of has this this lack of command, whereas a man will just deliver it. And if someone says no, the man's like, okay, no problem. But for a woman, like, we're asking to be told no, because we are delivering it with such hesitation. And so when I say don't apologize for it, I really think about this idea of how can we communicate with empathy and compassion, but with command, and not apologize for that? And how can we say, like, hey, I really think I deserve this promotion because of XYZ, or hey, I really would like to take on this project because I have experience doing XYZ. I think I could do it well in this regard. This is how I build a team, whatever it is. And I think that's, and that's hard for women, because there is, and I catch myself doing it. I'm a woman myself, and I still can receive that command from a man easier than I can receive it from a woman. I'm like, man, she's got tone. Like, that man, like, he knows what he wants. And like, if I'm doing that, then you know the man in the room is receiving it that way. And I like coach myself on this, and I coach my team on it. And it's still just such a gut reaction of how women should communicate, which is why it's a really fine line with being authoritative, but with compassion, like delivered kindly, and with good thought, but with authority and not with hesitation.
You know, when you say that, and when you see the difference between how people start a conversation, a colleague and I often source similar things. One of the things we noticed too that a lot of women can do, and I'm sure that there's a whole kind of long list, but is often apologize or say something like, this probably isn't going to make sense, or this probably is way off track, but it, and that is immediately diminishing. I'm only going to take 5 minutes of your time or a few minutes of your time. Sorry to interrupt. But as you say, those things, if we just look at what are we saying to preempt that completely, you know, like when someone starts the conversation or gets up on stage to speak, what you say coming out of your mouth right at first, the first thing I should say that comes out of your mouth completely segues that can start off how everything else is going to come. So, and I remember speaking, and I want to ask you a little bit to unpack this, because I think this is such an important topic. I was speaking to someone who was on a panel, women in leadership panel, and in a very male-dominated industry, and she was asked the question, so in your career, have you had difficulty? And you know what she said? Not really. I haven't noticed it. I just always put myself forward. I loved the environment because I was always learning and growing. And it was interesting to see that her attitude has always been, no, not really. I knew that there was jobs that I didn't get, but then I realized I needed to do some more, you know, work around those areas to make me more rounded. But it was her attitude that hadn't, see, I never go for those jobs. And when we have that attitude, it prevents us from looking and seeing, well, what can I do to help position myself? Is this things that I'm doing, saying, not doing, that is inhibiting my ability to step up for that role? It's important for us to realize, hey, we may be pointing the finger at others, but we need to take a good hard look at what are we doing to contribute to this.
I mean, I 100% agree. And I may have been the one on the stage with you, because I'm a big believer in the same thing. People ask me a lot, because I played sports growing up. I was an engineer in college. I've been in business in male-dominated tech space for most of my career. And so I went to business school where it was 70% male. And so all those things, I was always sort of like one of the fewer females in the room. And I just never noticed. Like, I've never sort of paid attention. I'm also little. I'm shorter than everybody around me. And I just never, maybe I had, you know, I don't think I had a Napoleon complex, but who knows about a little bit. But I was, I just never noticed. And to your point, it was because I'm not a victim, right? Like, I'm not a victim because I'm female that somehow that I deserve special, you know, anything. It's that, you know, I'm hopefully somewhat in charge of my career as much as anybody. And if I have gaps in my skills, gaps in my communication, gaps in my ability to execute or communicate my value, that's on me, right? And that's something that, now we can't control every environment, but we can certainly set ourselves up for success. And, you know, and then, you know, the decisions that companies make are obviously what they're going to do. But yeah, I mean, I think we have that right to own our position, look at our own perspectives, look at our own attitudes, as you say, look at our own skill gaps and close those, right? And then be able to, which is the harder part for women often, is then be able to communicate and articulate that value back out to, you know, to our leaders or to interviewers or to whoever it is that we're meeting with.
Yeah, fantastic. Kelly, I have loved our conversation today. If people would like to find out more about you, connect with you, what is the best way for them to do that?
Oh, definitely LinkedIn. So it's Kelly Hopping.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, thanks once again for coming on the show.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Hey, it's Anne-Marie. Before I go, are you a coach or a consultant who feels like the world's best kept secret? Your experience is vast, yet secretly you're frustrated because despite all of your hard work, you're just not getting the visibility, the recognition, or new clients you'd hope for, and you don't know why? I've created a free resource that'll help you build visibility, generate leads, and enroll dream clients with ease because you're seen as a trusted authority, even in a crowded marketplace. And you've positioned yourself as the choice versus just a choice for your dream client. To get started, go to annemariecross.com/gift. That's annemariecross.com/gift.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.